This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Evacuating Kabul. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Friday, August 13. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The U.S. military is sending troops to Afghanistan to escort personnel from the American embassy as the security situation deteriorates.
Escalating wars over facial coverings. Hear the growing number of school districts in Texas suing over a ban on mask mandates.
New numbers from the Census Bureau paint the picture of a rapidly diversifying population in the U.S.
And an early look at the earmarks that members of Congress are requesting for their districts.
Congressional Democratic leadership this year decided that it'd be a good idea to revive earmarks. They'd been gone for a decade. Democrats thought, lawmakers want to be able to direct spending. Lawmakers of both parties like to be able to say, hey, build that road, build that bridge.
Mark Jansen at USA Today has a look at wish list pork items from Capitol Hill. The U.S. military will help evacuate Americans from the embassy in Kabul as the security situation deteriorates across Afghanistan. Thousands of troops will be temporarily deployed to the Persian Gulf and Afghanistan to carry out the mission. State Department spokesman Ned Price.
This is not abandonment. This is not an evacuation. This is not the wholesale withdrawal. What this is a reduction in the size of our civilian footprint.
Fox News says the U.S. embassy will remain open for now, but will be reduced to a small staff. The New York Times says negotiators have reportedly asked the Taliban not to attack the U.S. embassy in Kabul if the terror group overtakes the city, threatening foreign aid. President Biden, in April, as you'll recall, pushed back former President Trump's deadline for a U.S. military withdrawal from May to September 11th. The Pentagon on July 9 detailed, quote, concerning advancement by the Taliban in the wake of the withdrawal. Another school year is set to begin with confusion over masks. For example, more school districts in Texas are pushing back against an executive order banning mask mandates, joining districts in other states filing lawsuits over the issue. A group of six districts, most of them in the Rio Grande Valley, filed suit yesterday against Governor Greg Abbott, arguing that he doesn't have the authority to stop them from requiring masks on their campuses. City and county leaders in San Antonio and Dallas have won temporary restraining orders blocking the enforcement of Mr. Abbott's executive order. Clay Jenkins is a judge in Dallas County.
The law in Texas gives the governor the right to suspend certain regulatory laws like licensing out-of-state nurses to come in and help in a public health emergency. It doesn't give him the right to stop a public health response.
With most public schools in the country set to begin classes in coming weeks, city and county officials are wrestling with decisions about whether to require masks as the highly contagious Delta variant causes a surge in COVID-19 cases. The latest Census Bureau data paints America as a more diverse and urban country today than it was 10 years ago. About 86% of the country's population lives in metro areas, the fastest growing area being the Villages, a Florida retirement community about 45 minutes from Orlando. Diversity skyrocketed, and for the first time in history, the country's white population shrank. But the country also grew at its slowest pace since the 1930s. More from this morning's Dave Duncan.
The multiracial population the past 10 years shot from 9 million people identifying as multiracial to 33.8 million, an increase of 276%. Overall, the U.S. is 58% white, 19% Hispanic, 12% black, and 11% Asian or otherwise. The country's white alone population decreased 8.6%. Also, there are about 1.4% fewer minors. The largest population under 18 belongs to Utah, and the fastest growing is in North Dakota. Gordon?
Thanks, Dave. Other stats, the four largest cities by population in the country remain New York, with 8.8 million residents, then Los Angeles with 3.8, followed by Chicago and Houston. Phoenix, by the way, beat out Philadelphia to become the fifth largest city, making it the fastest growing major city over the past decade. Coming up next, pork project requests from Congress.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Woo! Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices in Windows 10 Pro.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. Earmarks are back on Capitol Hill. About three quarters of House members requested earmarks, including all but one Democrat and about half of Republicans. In the Senate, about two-thirds of lawmakers requested earmarks, with nearly all Democrats and about one-third of Republicans making requests. Who wants what? We're joined by Bart Janssen, congressional reporter at USA Today. Bart, set this up.
Congressional Democratic leadership this year decided that it'd be a good idea to revive earmarks. They'd been gone for a decade. Congressional Republicans eliminated earmarks a decade ago because of the scandals that they had generated at that point. But Democrats thought, lawmakers want to be able to direct spending. Lawmakers of both parties like to be able to say, hey, build that road, build that bridge. And so they've revived it. They've put up some new guardrails that we can talk about if you want, but to put some limits on it, to put some safety measures on how the money is distributed. But they thought it was a good idea, and so we're in the middle of the negotiations about how much money is going to be spread where.
Mm. All right. So earmarks, also known as these pork projects, right? Give an example of who wants what, or at least who has requested what.
Yeah, in the House, they limited requests to 10 per person, so there are thousands of requests. In the Senate, they didn't even put a limit on how many requests there can be. So I just dipped a toe in and started looking at them. One of the humorous ones I thought was Senator Bozeman of Arkansas, Republican of Arkansas, requested $650,000 for feral swine mitigation. I thought, people call this stuff pork barrel spending. Here's something that actually has to do with pigs. Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat from California, has a bunch of different requests. One of the interesting ones I thought was a beach erosion project in San Diego County using LIDAR, using a sort of laser technology to monitor beach erosion. I just thought that was interesting. But then another amusing one was Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican of Missouri, requested $11.5 million for the President Truman Presidential Library there in Missouri. But Truman was the guy who had the sign on his desk that says, hey, this is the buck stops here, and we're going to find out whether the buck or $11 million bucks is going to stop there this year.
Right. Wow. We're speaking with Bart Janssen, congressional reporter at USA Today. He's put together a story called Congress Has Started Requesting Earmarks for Their Districts from Pig Mitigation to a Presidential Library. Does it make sense that the more power you have in Congress, the more money in earmarks you might get?
Well, that's always the presumption. You just say, besides leadership of the two chambers who can, guide all the pieces on the chessboard, you have these leaders of the appropriations committees. They're the ones that actually, decide how much money each agency gets and then with earmarks all the way down to, which road gets built. But in the early requests on the House side, where the House has approved all of its spending bills now and sent them over to the Senate, on the House side, the leaders, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Appropriations Chairman Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat of Connecticut, they got about $14 million apiece in approved earmarks. But the peak, the top guy, was a guy who wasn't even an appropriator, Representative Pete DeFazio of Oregon. He's the head of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, so he does a lot with highways and other construction projects. He got the biggest number so far at $43 million. And what that revealed was just that if you have a single project that's expensive, that can sort of put you higher on the leaderboard. In DeFazio's case, he had a $32 million project to repair a jetty in Coos Bay, which is very important. Apparently, it's been just 20 feet of it falls off every year. They've lost 750 feet of jetty, and so he says, well, we need to fix this. Let's get the Army Corps on it. As I said, they still have to negotiate the final dollar figures on all of these requests, but DeFazio came out on top on this list so far.
Thanks, Bart. Bart Jansen, congressional reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Afghanistan's rapidly advancing Taliban insurgents entered a western provincial capital today, hours after they captured the country's second and third largest cities in a lightning advance just weeks before the U.S. is set to end its longest war. The seizure of Kandahar and Herat marks the biggest prizes yet for the Taliban. With security rapidly deteriorating, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. will send in 3,000 troops to help evacuate personnel from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul.
It would be wrong to conclude that there was one specific event that led to this decision. That we believe this is the prudent thing to do, given the rapidly deteriorating security situation in and around Kabul.
Britain and Canada are also sending in troops to help evacuate their embassies.
Number two.
The 2020 census shows white people declined in number for the first time on record in the overall U.S. population, while Hispanic and Asian populations boomed this past decade. The numbers are sure to set off an intense partisan battle over congressional representation at a time of deep national division and fights over voting rights. The numbers could help determine control of the House in the 2022 election and provide an electoral edge for years to come.
Number three.
The Supreme Court has declined to block a COVID vaccine mandate at Indiana University, clearing the way for school officials to require students and faculty members to be vaccinated. Associate Justice Amy Coney Barrett rejected a request from Indiana University students for emergency relief. The case is the first challenge to a vaccine mandate and arrived at the nation's highest court as a growing number of employers, restaurants, and schools are requiring vaccinations. Rarely does a gimmick live up to the hype, but Major League Baseball's Field of Dreams game certainly did, ending in Hollywood fashion last night. White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson crushed a two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth to give Chicago a 9-8 walk-off win over the Yankees. Yankees manager Aaron Boone.
That's probably the greatest setting for a baseball game that I've ever been a part of. It was awesome.
The city of Dyersville, Iowa, hosted the game, which was the first ever regular season MLB game played in Iowa. The 1989 movie star Kevin Costner almost stole the show with a slow, ponderous stroll into the outfield, as his character did.
How about that? That worked out pretty well.
It did.
For baseball.
Yeah.
Nice. Thank you, Jen. Coming up next, your Plan B vacation.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for joining us. Many travelers aren't just gearing up for one vacation, but two. There's the trip they would most like to take and Plan B if the Delta variant of COVID-19 renders their original idea untenable. More from Allison Poley, travel reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Allison, what's trending?
So a lot of travelers are gearing up for late summer travel, but they're worried about the Delta variant. And so in the back of their minds, there is a Plan B vacation that they might take if the Delta variant makes their original vacation not possible.
How do you do that? Since it seems like things are expensive, hotel rooms perhaps can be difficult to find, rental cars can be hard to find. What do you do for a Plan B?
It can be really tricky. So a lot of people who are turning to Plan B have planned international trips, and they're either looking at a lot of new restrictions that might make their original trip not feasible anymore, or they're worried about cases of the Delta variant rising. So what they're doing instead are postponing those trips and instead traveling domestically, usually in a cheaper type of vacation that's a little bit closer to home where they might be driving, and then hoping that they can take that international trip at some point in the future.
There was maybe a travel industry person in your story who said something along the lines of people are starting to become more aware right now of the Delta variant, and
that could mean an uptick in cancellations? What was the hint there?
That's exactly right. It could mean an uptick in cancellations. So right now, there aren't a lot of huge effects, but traveler behavior can change really quickly. So even yesterday, Southwest Airlines said that the recent COVID surge caused bookings to slow and cancellations were rising. And even 3 weeks earlier, the airline said it hadn't seen any recent impact from the Delta variant. So things are changing. People are starting to question their trips. But travel agents also have said everyone has a different risk tolerance. And some people who are fully vaccinated have no qualms about taking those trips and are still forging ahead.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Allison Poley, travel reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called, "As the Delta Variant Spreads, the Best Travel Advice is Having a Plan B Vacation." One of the analysts, too, said it's just difficult sometimes to figure out why somebody isn't traveling. So I guess it's hard to prepare, right, if you're an airline or a hotel, perhaps.
Right, exactly. So it's tough to tell if people are nervous about the cases rising, they don't want to get sick, or they don't want to deal with all of the restrictions that are in place potentially abroad. But some travelers are very nervous about potentially getting infected and testing positive abroad. Then they would have to deal with the expense of booking a new plane ticket, finding a hotel to stay in for the quarantine period. So that could add time and a big expense to what's in some cases already a costly trip.
Give an example of, say, a family or small group you talk to that has done this and is maybe planning differently.
Yeah, so there was an epidemiologist who we spoke to who planned to hold his bachelor party in Mexico during the first week of August. But a few weeks before, he was looking at the COVID cases, they were rising, and decided to move the celebration to Austin instead.
Thanks, Allison. Allison Poley, travel reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
Choices are great most of the time, but there are tough choices too, like the choice between getting a close shave or paying a fair price. That's the kind of choice we can do without. But when you choose Harry's, you get both. Try it yourself. Redeem a Harry's trial set when you go to harrys.com/deal. They craft their blades in their own German factory and cut out the bells and whistles you don't need to make high-quality razors at a fair price, as low as $2 a blade. Their smooth, comfortable shave impresses me every day, and I think you'll be impressed too. Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/deal. You'll get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to try Harry's today.
We are America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, August 13. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. American troops to evacuate the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan. Tropical storm watch for parts of South Florida, thanks to Fred. More than 212,000 migrants encountered at the southern border last month, a 13% jump from June. The FDA approves COVID-19 booster shots for certain immunocompromised people. Supreme Court lifts New York's ban on evictions while litigation continues. Britney Spears' father stepping down as her conservator. And Delta Airlines shows a softer side. That story in about 20 minutes. President Biden's bid to inject government deeper into the private sector is getting its first big test in the broadband industry. Congress on Tuesday, as you'll recall, advanced legislation that allocates $65 billion in new taxpayer money to expand high-speed internet access for millions of unconnected households. In doing so, proponents say, the legislation recasts broadband service as a necessity more akin to water and electricity. More from Jacob Schlesinger, senior correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. Jake, break it down.
So the first one is a significant increase in government spending on the internet, $65 billion in total over the next few years. Roughly $40 billion of that goes to building out high-speed broadband to areas, mainly rural, that don't have it right now. And the balance goes to subsidizing internet for low-income households, which is itself a pretty big change. beyond the money, there's a number of strings that get attached for internet providers, whether it's requirements for disclosure, a kind of nutrition label on their plans, to requirements that some of them participate in offering low-income plans with certain terms and conditions. So in a lot of ways, whether it's the money or the regulation, this does open the door to a bigger Washington role in a sector that comparatively has had relatively little.
Yeah. How do the internet providers feel about this?
They're mixed. I think they're not wild about a lot of the strings attached. They're thrilled about getting the money. And so it's a bit of a trade-off. I think that they are relieved in a way in that the final result of this Senate bill does not go as far as President Biden wanted to go in his original proposals, which would have had a much more significant government role in both as a regulator and a competitor to the internet providers. So I would say they were concerned. I think they're concerned about where this might lead, but they got some wins as well.
Yeah. Did people working from home during the pandemic play a role in bringing this to the forefront?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great question. And really that, in a lot of ways, was the turning point in this debate. You know, we've been talking with growing frequency about the need for universal broadband for many years, from both parties, really. But the experience of the last year where most everybody had to move everything online, those of us who were fortunate to have a high-speed connection along the lines of what we're talking over right now, made the transition seamlessly. But those who suddenly couldn't go to school, those who suddenly needed to rely on the internet to reach their doctors but didn't have high-speed broadband, it really exposed that gap. And I think, and what's interesting about it is, and this bill was bipartisan, we can talk a little more about that, is, you know, a lot of the places that don't have access are rural areas, which dominate red states. And I think a lot of members of Congress, particularly in red states, were hearing from constituents saying, we're getting slaughtered because we can't log in.
Wow. We're speaking with Jake Schlesinger, senior correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called U.S. Government Wants a Greater Role in How Americans Access Internet. All right. So you referenced farms, some of these rural areas. But I mean, this is market forces at work, right? I mean, it's difficult to reach those folks, build out and make them customers.
Yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's what the internet providers would say is, look, there's just some parts where it's just not economical to go. And so I think, you know, it's taken a while for us to conclude that, us as a country, that is, meaning, you know, there has been steady growth in internet provisions. There has been steady changes in technology. Some people still think that ultimately technology will make it economical to build even to remote areas, particularly through satellite, but that's still perspective. And I think what happened was the consensus was, look, the market is, it's done a great job of getting internet to a lot of people, but it's not going to get it to that last core, particularly not in the urgency that we now feel, especially post-pandemic.
All right. Thanks, Jake. Jacob Schlesinger, senior correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, some travel perspective, how airline tickets are a bargain. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. With all the changes in air travel over the past 25 years, is anything left unchanged? Yes, the ticket price. In the first quarter of 1996, the average domestic airline ticket cost $284. 25 years later, the average domestic ticket cost $260. In-depth analysis from Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Scott, take us through it.
Adjusted for inflation, air travel is a huge bargain. If you look at the prices today, average prices from the first quarter of this year, so you know what you see today is higher than it was earlier this year. But compare that to the first quarter of 1996, 25 years ago, and adjust for inflation, an air travel ticket domestically on average cost 85% more than it does today. Prices have consistently come down, or you look at it without adjusting for inflation, it basically stayed the same. What you paid $350 for a domestic ticket 25 years ago, you still pay $350 for. Mm.
And that is owed to what? Competition? Deregulation?
This time period really post dates deregulation, but it is all about competition. It's also about technology. I think technology has had both a profound impact on ways airlines can operate their business that has saved them tons of money, but also how consumers shop for tickets. This is an industry where we have perfect pricing information. You can compare different airlines instantly, see exactly what it costs. Shop a lot of different places if you want, but it's going to be the same price. And you don't get that when you're shopping for a television or a car or you name it. That's created a lot of pricing pressure, and the rise of the ultra low cost carriers. We've continually seen discount airlines pressure the bigger airlines, and it's a business where you can move your assets around instantly. It's not like building an office building or a movie theater or whatever. The airplane can go anywhere. So wherever a discounter sees prices get high, they run the airplanes over there and bring the prices down. There's just tremendous discipline on the pricing in the airline industry.
We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Air Travel Prices Have Barely Budged in 25 Years. Is the quality the same as it was 25 years ago?
Not anywhere near close. Yeah, no. And this is you do get what you pay for, right? Airlines can't extract the high prices that they might like to, certainly that they did when service was better. And so we've seen service degrade as prices have come down. This is the hard reality. It makes sense, right? You pay less for it, you're going to get a cheaper product. And that's clearly happened in the airline business. Packing more seats on the airplane physically reduces your comfort, but also makes it possible for airlines to offer more tickets at cheap prices, bringing the average down and competing with the discounters. You can look at it a number of different ways, and certainly service has degraded in the United States. And I think, there is a sort of pendulum aspect to this. I think a lot of people are really questioning now whether it's gone too far. And whether we should expect more reliability out of airlines, whether we should expect minimum levels at least of comfort and service, and whether knowing that the price would go up, more people are certainly willing to pay more.
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. 12 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could spend some time with us. Don't forget to check out a podcast of the program. You can hear it on our website, thismorningwithgordondeal.com, or on all the popular podcast platforms. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning.
Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Tropical Depression Fred is slowly strengthening and could regain tropical storm status sometime today. The storm is dropping heavy rain over parts of Cuba and is tracking towards South Florida. Forecasters have issued a tropical storm watch for the Florida Keys and the state's southwest coast. 3 to 6 inches of rain expected in the region this weekend.
Number two.
The FDA has expanded emergency use of Pfizer and Moderna's COVID vaccines to authorize a booster shot for certain people with weakened immune systems. For now, boosters won't be needed for everyone, but Anthony Fauci, the nation's chief medical advisor, says they likely will be down the road.
As soon as we find out that we will need to have to booster people, we're going to be ready to do it right away. That's really what the plan is.
Number three.
Britney Spears' father is planning to step down from the conservatorship that has controlled her life and money for 13 years. James Spears filed legal documents saying that while there are no grounds for his removal, he will step down. But the document gave no timetable for his resignation from his role helping oversee his daughter's finances. A Texas state senator ended a 15-hour filibuster yesterday in the Democrats' latest defiance over a sweeping GOP voting measure, which passed minutes after she wearily left the floor. Carol Alvarado began speaking shortly before 6 p.m. Wednesday. Even though she acknowledged the filibuster would not block the legislation, she was required to remain standing and speaking and was prohibited from taking bathroom breaks for 15 hours. Minutes after she stopped, the bill passed 18 to 11, although it's once again stalled since Democrats continue to stay away from the state house in a standoff that has entered the 32nd day. We've known this for a while. Arizona and Texas have a lot of fast-growing cities. According to the 2020 census, Buckeye, Arizona, a suburb of Phoenix, was the country's fastest-growing city over the last 10 years. Goodyear, another Phoenix suburb, was also in the top 10. Four of the cities on the list are in Texas: Frisco, McKinney, New Braunfels, and Conroe. Other fast-growing cities include Irvine, California, South Jordan, Utah, Meridian, Idaho, and Kent, Washington. The four largest cities in the country remain New York, L.A., Chicago, and Houston. Phoenix moved ahead of Philadelphia to become the fifth largest city in the country.
Very good. Give me that, is that Meridian, Idaho? Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you, and to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Thanks for being with us. A ruthless COVID-19 variant has given the world the word Delta a negative connotation, right? But one company is hoping to change that narrative for at least one youngster. People.com says Kelly Girardi mentioned Delta Airlines on Twitter earlier this month in regards to her daughter, whose name is also Delta, and her difficult experiences with her moniker. She tweeted, quote, "Petition not to call it Delta Plus and instead move on to the next letter in this cursed variant alphabet." She concluded with, "Sincerely, the mother of a very sweet little Delta." In response, Delta Airlines team sent Ms. Girardi's 3-year-old daughter, Delta, a care package that includes a pink Delta backpack, Delta-themed Biscoff cookies, and a model plane. Also inside the care package was a special handwritten note. It read, "Hi, Kelly. We saw your tweet and just wanted to let you know that we think your daughter's name is amazing. It's the name for people who were meant to fly." And the note finished with, "Wear it loud and hashtag Delta proud. Your friends at Delta." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.